welcome to Speak a Dogcast. My name is David Farb, Animal Behavior Specialist, and I'm broadcasting from WOUF Woof Studios in beautiful Palm City, Florida. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you haven't clicked that subscribe or that follow button, do so right now. New episodes come out every Wednesday, and you're going to want to check them out. You can also follow me on Instagram at Speak a Dogcast, and you can join me there every Tuesday. Except yesterday was the first one I'd skipped. I apologize for Training Tip Tuesday. Yes, we're doing a Training Tip Tuesday most every Tuesday. It's every Tuesday except yesterday on Training Tips, Dog Training Tips, a great dog training tip coming to you every single week on my Instagram. Go check it out. The visual thing, if the visual thing is more your thing, you can subscribe to my YouTube channel at Speak a Dogcast. And if you want to support the show even further, become a patron of the show today, patreon.com/speakadogcast. If you guys love the show, if you love the podcast, if you love what you're hearing, do me a favor. Scroll on down, especially my Spotify, Apple Podcast users, give me that 5-star rating, leave me a review. I would really, really appreciate it. Now, before we start going into today's show today, just wanted to talk about something really quick, a little somber. Unfortunately, my mother and father-in-law had to put down their lab yesterday. And, I just wanted to say that I'm thinking about them, and it's tough, guys. You know, anybody out there has lost a pet, you know, it's the worst. It's gut-wrenching, and I feel just terrible and so bad. But at the same time, Teddy, their dog, he was a 16-year-old yellow lab. I mean, if you can even believe it, a full yellow lab, 16 years old. He lived to the ripe old age. He was a very, very well-loved dog, guys, very well-loved. And I think that definitely had something to do with his long life. So Barbie and David, I'm thinking about both of you guys. I'm so sorry. It sucks. There's nothing worse, really. I mean, guys, our pets are not with us long enough. Our dogs aren't with us long enough. It's so hard the short time we have them. Enjoy the short time you have them. Take it in. Get them out for hikes. Get them out for walks. You know, do things your dogs love. Let them play with a stick. Take them swimming. Give them an extra hug today because it's tough. So we're thinking about you, and I know a lot of my listeners are too. So we're all very, very sorry you guys had to do that yesterday. So. But let's get going with today's show. We're going to talk about what we have going on today's episode. So on today's episode, we have proper corrections. Yes, a very important thing to understand, to learn, and to utilize. Are you making proper corrections with your dog? If you're not, you should be. We'll talk more about that. Then comes the right breed for you. Yes, there is. There is a right breed for you out there. There's also a wrong breed for you out there. I can guarantee that. So we're going to talk about how the best ways to avoid that and going about finding out what the best dog is for you. Then we have the history of Animal Mascots 101, followed by the listener Q&A. And if you have any questions for the listener Q&A, you can email me questions@speakadogcast.com or message me on social media. Your question could get featured in the show. Yes, now before we get going with today's show, got to give you that trivia question. And today's question is going to be, in the movie Finding Nemo, what type of fish is Dory? Yes, in the movie Finding Nemo, what type of fish is Dory? I will give you the answer to that question somewhere in today's podcast, so be sure you stick around, sit, stay, and enjoy the show. Next on Speak a Dogcast, proper corrections. I think it's something that the information is not out there enough, you know, how to make proper corrections. The fact that corrections are okay with your dog. And here's the thing with corrections. You know, first we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about the definition of a correction, how to utilize a correction. And, you know, one thing we have to understand about corrections is that there's a multitude of different kinds of corrections. And as we're going to learn, part of it depends upon the individual animal, the individual dog, and how we utilize a correction and what that correction is going to be. So, you know, the first thing I want to say is, as an owner, I want this segment to empower you to be able to make proper corrections with your dog, set proper boundaries with your dog, and in doing so, have a better relationship and training with your dog, right? So we have to start with that empowerment. Understanding that corrections are not a bad thing, guys. They're not. They're actually a very normal part of everyday life when you think about it. When you drive down the street, there are corrections all around you, you know? Or there's at least the threat of a correction, the possibility of a consequence, right? And those are things like tickets, speeding tickets. I mean, that's the easiest. Like when you walk out your door, you get in your car and you head to work, one of the first things that is a potential consequence for your day is a ticket of some kind, whether it's speeding, parking ticket. I mean, all the different ways, traffic infractions, running a red light. There are boundaries all around you. I mean, for crying out loud, there are literally lines on the ground as a boundary. You know what I mean? And so when we think about everyday life as a human being, our life is full of boundaries, rules, regulations, and to some degree, that's a wonderful thing. That's what creates stability. That's what creates a civil society. And so when we talk about corrections with animals, all of a sudden we go, whoa, 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 we can't, no, wait, David, I can't correct my animal. We can't do that. Why? Why not, guys? Okay, if all of these boundaries pretty naturally over thousands, I mean, come on, let's like look at our evolution. We've created these boundaries for a reason. They work. Okay, like we've gotten success out of it in some sort, and we evolve and we learn and we get better, of course. But the point is, these are natural boundaries that have now evolved into human boundaries, natural boundaries that exist. And so for your dog, for animals, for every animal on this planet, there are natural boundaries that exist. And they usually start from the time an animal is born or hatches or whatever, where there are rules, there's boundaries. There's what happens to the smallest dog? What happens to the smallest puppy? The runt. Everybody knows about the runt. Mom leaves the runt to die. Because why? It's about the betterment of the pack with dogs. And if we give all of the nutrients and everything to the weakest one who may not survive anyway, we're actually, you know, hurting the rest of the pack by not giving the nutrients they could have had when they're all strong and could be stronger. That's the concept. That's the natural boundaries, natural rules, natural discipline that already exists in a dog's life from day one. And as human beings, we go, no, no, no. We can't correct our dogs. Why not? Guys, corrections are a natural part of every animal's life, and to deny that is sheer ignorance. And I'll ask you, well, you have lack of corrections in your dog's life. Do you have a well-behaved, well-adjusted dog? And I think you know the answer to that. It's either yes or no. It's not, well, Dave, it's something. No, it's either a yes or a no. And you have to be honest with yourself in answering that question. Are you a person who doesn't provide corrections, rules, and boundaries for your dog? And is your dog well-balanced, well-behaved, and well-trained? And I can pretty much guarantee I know the answer to that if, you know, you're not giving corrections. Okay? Again, those of you on my YouTube, you can look behind me. This is what corrections get you right there. That's a calm, relaxed dog. I don't have to correct him constantly anymore. You know, it's nothing like that. We've laid the rules and boundaries down. He understands them, and he knows how to stay within them. And there's the point. That's what corrections get us, that stability. All right, so the definition of corrections, and look, there's a lot of different words for it. Punishment, corrections. Oh, David, you said punishment. That's so horrible. No, it's not. punishment, corrections. The fancy technical term for it is an aversive. So I like to start with the definition of an aversive. Anything an animal works to avoid. Aversive, avoid. Right? Makes it easy to remember. Anything an animal works to avoid. Anything an animal works to avoid. Make sure we understand that first word. Anything. Okay? This doesn't have to be physical. How about withholding a treat? Not giving a treat to our dog. Anything the animal works to avoid. I don't know about you, but most dogs that I've come across, they want that treat really bad. So just withholding a treat is a form of punishment. Why? Because the dog is going to work to avoid not getting the treat. They want the treat. So they're going to try to find and avoid not getting that treat withheld. That's the behavior they're going to avoid. So I can actually utilize that as a form of punishment, as a consequence, as a correction. And punishment, anything an animal works to avoid, is how we decrease behavior. This is, again, this isn't like something I made up yesterday. This is how this works. Punishment is something we use to decrease behavior. So if your dog is exhibiting a behavior you don't like, you need it to decrease, we have to provide some sort of correction. Something they work to avoid to decrease the behavior. Right? If I just kind of follow this word problem in my head like a little math problem, just follow it like a little flow chart, you can really quickly go, well, my dog's doing something I don't like. All right, well, I got to give him a reason to stop. I have to provide something they work to avoid. Sometimes it's as easy as a redirection. We'll talk about that. But let's get into what a correction actually looks like with our dogs. All right. So now we understand corrections are necessary. They're an everyday part of everybody's life. Dogs, animals, birds, cats, humans, doesn't matter. Everybody has natural boundaries and corrections, consequences, or at least a threat of consequence in their daily lives. We can all agree upon that. From there, we can go to the definition of anything an animal works to avoid is the definition of a consequence. Anything they work to avoid, right? Okay, so we know that. So then how do we apply the definition to an animal? Now, here's the thing, guys. This is a very important detail. An aversive, consequence, punishment, an aversive is only an aversive if the animal works to avoid it. Very important key detail there, okay? Just because you intend for something to be a consequence, intend for something to be a punishment, doesn't mean it is, doesn't mean it will be. You know, I was talking with somebody the other day, one of my clients, and he's telling me, I asked him, well, you know, when your dog does this thing you don't like, what do you do? And he says, well, we tell her no. I said, yeah, but do you do anything else? He goes, well, no. We only tell her no. And then he realized, he goes, yeah, okay, well, I guess she probably doesn't have any reason to stop because all we're doing is saying no and she doesn't stop. I went, aha, there it is. Right? They intended for the word no. And most people, this is a very common thing here. Most people want the word no to be a punishment. The problem is, guys, this is conditioning. You can't reason with your dog and go, hey, I'm going to say the word no. And when I say the word no, I need you to stop. And they're going to go, oh, yeah, okay, sure, yep. It's not how it works. It's a conditioned response. I have to give them something to work to avoid paired with the word no to condition that that word means consequence. That's the only reason no is ever going to mean a damn thing to your dog is because you condition a stimulus with it. It's that simple. Okay. So corrections. Sorry, I got a little off track. But corrections, there's multiple ways we can provide a correction. But like I said, the basis of it has to be the animal has to work to avoid it. Your dog has to work to avoid it. So one of the most basic, easy ways we do it, guys, collar corrections, you know, collar corrections. Now, again, martingale collar, 6-foot regular nylon leash. It's always what I'm going to recommend. Get yourself a martingale collar. Best darn collars out there. 2/3 nylon, 1/3 chain, not the all cloth version. You want the 2/3 nylon, 1/3 chain version. They're the best ones out there. Martingale collars, MARTINGALE, Martingale. Go check it out. So martingale collars are one of the best ways to provide a correction. Now, when we make these corrections, guys, it's very important to understand the purpose of these collars. The whole purpose of any kind of collar that constrains, that tightens, the whole concept is to mimic the way dogs naturally correct each other, which is a nip to the neck, a nip. It's not a bite and clamp and grab and squeeze, which is what most people use choker collars. And unfortunately, they use these collars. I call it like this. They use it like a hammer when in fact it's a screwdriver. And if you use a tool improperly, you're not going to get the correct result. And this is why corrections have gotten such a bad name, because people utilize these tools improperly. And then there becomes a lack of understanding of what the tool is actually supposed to accomplish. So remember, when you're using any kind of restraining collar like that, a constricting, a martingale, a slip leash, a choker, even a prong collar for that matter, if it's sized properly, it should be tightening and releasing to some degree. The whole concept is to go in and out, quick correction, a pop correction, if you will, not a pull, not a yank, no. Pop, in and out, zip, zip. The thing I like about the martingale collars, and the chokers will work this way sometimes, but not as well, in my opinion. Another reason I prefer martingales most of the time. The martingale collar will actually make one single noise if you do it correctly. Zip. You will tighten and release that martingale collar so fast that it only makes one noise. That's how you know you've done the correction correctly. Okay, that's one thing I like. They give you a little auditory feedback in that you have done the correction correctly. If you're hearing zip, 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 if you're hearing all those variations of noises with your collar, you're not fast enough and you need to get faster. Okay, look, sometimes corrections are made with a flick of my wrist. Most of the time, really, for that matter, they really are. Corrections can be made with a flick of a wrist. Just because I want you to be fast with this collar and this correction does not mean I need you to be incredibly hard or intense. That is not the intent. We need to match our corrections to whatever our dogs are doing. Okay. If my dog is simply like staring at another dog and thinking about doing the wrong thing, maybe a light little just, I mean, so much so that the collar just kind of moves a little bit on their neck to redirect that focus. Now, if my dog is full on lunging for another dog aggressively because I know the dog's got an aggression issue, yeah, we need to make a big pop correction. There is nothing wrong with healthy corrections, guys. The pulling and holding, the zip zip, the pulling and holding, that is what can potentially create issues. But if you use these collars properly as they were actually properly designed to be used and utilized, you're going to have a much better result. So I will say my number one when it comes to corrections, without a doubt, the number one best, safest, healthiest way to make a correction for your dog is with a martingale collar. Period. No ifs, ands, or buts here, guys. The collar corrections are going to be what you utilize more than any other correction. It is just that simple. It's safer for you. It's safer for the dog. It's very black and white. It gets the information across. Look, from the psychological standpoint, we're providing a consequence, an aversive. And then again, if we're doing it zip in and out, I'm providing that consequence and then removing the consequence to negatively reinforce a behavior. It's very black and white if I do it like that. Consequence, negative reinforcement. Punishment, negative reinforcement. Punishment, negative reinforcement. But if I'm tightening and holding and pulling and yanking and then they're pulling and then all of it, that's not black and white communication to your dog. It's not healthy. You know, it's not, your dog's going to be frustrated. You're going to be frustrated and it's not going to work like you want it to. So I oftentimes get, and we'll get to the Q&A today. It was good timing. We'll talk about that in the Q&A. So a very applicable question to this today. But it's something you really have got to work on, guys. It's technique. It's not something you're going to just instantly get overnight. It's a little technique. This is one of the trickier parts of dog training is having that proper technique and timing. We've talked about timing before. Go check out my other segments on timing because that's really what this is. Okay. Now, other kinds of corrections. Here's the thing about a correction and an aversive, right? Let's go back to that definition for just a moment here. Anything an animal works to avoid. So let's say I have a dog, and I've given this example plenty of times, but it's so perfect because, you know, everybody has issues with this. Most people have issues with this at some point. Let's say we have a dog, we're out on a walk on a leash, and we're walking, and all of a sudden we see a dog coming toward us, and our dog gets distracted. Now, it doesn't matter what the distraction is, aggression, excitement. I don't really care. Doesn't matter. For sake of the example here, all that matters is that your dog is getting distracted by that dog walking toward us. Now, in that moment, your dog wants to what? Keep walking toward that dog. What if they're pulling you? Well, that's not a behavior we want. I need to decrease that behavior. So I need some sort of punishment. Now, a collar correction is an option, but sometimes when a dog is in a heightened state like this, still being able to see that dog even after making corrections may not really get the job done. It may not fully change their focus in that moment. And we have to have other options. We have to understand there are other corrections in this moment. I can actually provide a different consequence other than the collar. And here's what it is. Now, we have to look at the dog's motivation, right? The dog wants to move toward that dog that's coming toward us. It wants to go that direction. That's what it wants. Now, I hadn't mentioned this. We're going to say the definition of punishment. Anything an animal works to avoid. Quite frankly, we can really look at it and go, the definition of punishment is the opposite of what an animal wants. That's like a layman way to say it, if you will. It's the opposite of what the animal wants. So if my dog wants to go that way, I want to decrease that behavior. Guess what? Just turning around and walking the opposite direction actually is a form of punishment to that dog. And what they're going to realize is, boy, every time I pull toward this dog, my owner turns and walks the other way. Every time I calm down and relax, the owner turns and walks back toward the dog. If I start pulling again, we go the other way again. Well, gee, every time I start pulling, I get further away from the dog. But every time I stay with my owner and relax, we get closer to the dog. Punishment, reinforcement, negative reinforcement, and positive reinforcement. It's actually simultaneously both. But we're not going to get into that today because we're talking about corrections. Okay, but do you see the point? Anything an animal works to avoid is the definition. So that dog wants to move, my dog rather that I have, wants to move toward that dog. So obviously they want to avoid moving away from the dog. They want to get closer, so they want to avoid getting further. I can utilize moving away as a form of punishment, as a correction, as a consequence, as a way to communicate to my dog, hey, the more you pull, the less you get what you want. Parents, you can take a note from that one. The more you act up, the less you get. Pretty basic concept when you think about it. And we're very, very, very easily able to apply this concept with our dogs simply by turning and walking the other direction, providing a correction. Crazy stuff. Now, one other thing I want to note, another small example. This is a not so successful version. This is an exercise that I don't really do it. I mean, yeah, look, you can try it, but I don't really prefer this exercise. We have a puppy who gets very excited to see people. And what does everybody tell you to do? Oh, just turn your back and ignore the puppy. Guys, the puppy has energy to keep jumping and pouncing on you, whether you're looking at it or not. They could give two craps. They're having a good old time and they're getting something out of it. So just taking away the attention is not a punishment. And that was the point. I wanted to show you something where just because we intend for something to be a punishment, I love it. Everybody goes, oh, that works every time. No, it doesn't. I've seen it work like 10% of the time. It's just not true. I'm sorry. Like, you're inexperienced if you're saying crap like that. When I have somebody say to me, oh, just turn and ignore the puppy and they'll stop jumping on you, I'm like, okay. You've done this a lot. No, you haven't. All right. So that's the thing. Just because you intend for something to be a consequence doesn't mean it is. And you have to, as the owner, go, well, that didn't work. Let's do something different. Let's try a collar correction. Let's try touch corrections. And that's the last correction we're going to talk about today. Because again, to me, like 80% of the time, you should be utilizing the collar. You should be utilizing the collar, guys. If you have a puppy, let them drag a leash around. If you have a puppy and they're chewing the leash, keep the collar on them, reach in and correct them with the collar. Nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, it's what you should be doing. But touch corrections. Now, touch corrections, guys, you got to be careful with them. You know your dog, know your dog's behavior, and don't get yourself into trouble. If you have a very bitey, mouthy dog, this may not be the proper way to go about correcting your dog, and you may want to get with a professional before trying something like this. But touch corrections are, I use three fingers, I mimic the nip of a dog, that's the whole point, we're mimicking the nip, and I go right on the side of the shoulder, on the side of the neck, not on the throat. Absolutely not. Not completely on the shoulder blade, but sort of that in-between meaty area, if you will. You'll watch mama dog actually do that to puppies, correct them in that same area. And that's the point where, you know, you've seen Caesar do it. Come on, make that little noise. Don't make the noise. Because you don't know how to do it right, it's a waste of your breath. but the correction is not. Make the touch correction right there. The other spot we can do it is on the back, on the hinds, on the side of the back leg, on their hinds. Another good spot we want to get in and out. Think of it as you're acting like the collar. It's that same concept. I want you to be in and out. Make that little correction, get in. I'm making the chit noise. I shouldn't be because, again, you shouldn't do it unless you know what you're doing. But you want to make that little touch correction, little nip, if you will, very quickly, in and out. Okay? Works very well with puppies. Works really well with adult dogs, do if you know what you're doing. But again, I highly recommend relying on the psychology side of it, knowing what motivates your dog, knowing what doesn't, and utilizing a healthy collar correction. That's the best way to go about this, guys. So again, I hope this helps you guys. I really do. I hope this segment helps you out. It empowers you to go out and correct your dogs, provide boundaries, provide rules, provide discipline. The affection too, of course, guys. Like, I don't have to tell you, I don't have to remind owners to give affection to their dogs. They're really good at that. What we're not so good at is the boundaries, rules, and discipline, the corrections. So be empowered that you should be correcting your dog. Be empowered that you should be providing boundaries. Utilize proper corrections with proper collars, and I guarantee you, you'll have better results in training your dog. Tired of your dog barking all the time? Or maybe you want them to stop jumping on people when they come over? Or does your dog take you for a walk instead of the other way around? Well, we can help. At The Nature of Training and Speak a Dogcast, we are committed to improving the relationships and lives people have with their pets. No matter what behavioral issue you are experiencing, from an unruly puppy to more severe issues, we can help. Our virtual training programs are catered to you and your pet and create a training plan that gets results. For more information, you can check out our website at www.thenatureoftraining.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram at Speak a Dogcast. With the ability to connect, teach, and train with pet owners around the world, together we can make a better home for our furry friends. The Nature of Training and Speak a Dogcast, helping you achieve success with your pet. Speak a Dogcast, the right breed for you. Everybody's different, guys. Everybody is different. Everybody's going to have different things that they look for in a breed, and that's totally okay. That's why we have so many amazing dog breeds out there. There is such a wide variety. But it's also very important that you know what breeds are going to complement you, your family, the best, and the breed that you're going to complement the best. Because after all, we're not just looking out for human being needs. We need to be looking out for the needs of the dog. And I do get this a lot where people are just a little unsure. Hey, where should I go here? You know, we haven't had a dog since I was a little kid. I want to get a dog now that I have kids. What do we do? And, you know, the tough thing is in my line of work, most people don't think to come to me before they ever get a dog. I tried years and years ago, and this was before, I mean, this was when I was pretty early on. I tried to offer a service of like, I don't even remember what I called it, but puppy prep, you know, kind of thing, a puppy prep, coming, sitting down with your family, talking about your interests, what you guys like to do, you know, finding a breed that's going to match you, your energy level, your lifestyle, all these important things that are going to, again, not only give you guys the fulfillment you're looking for in a dog, but the dog gets the fulfillment back as well. And so it was a tough thing because you have to get to the client before they ever get a dog. And normally they're in like a PetSmart or something like that. And you know, that's corporate. They're not going to talk to me. So it was a tough thing to sell because it's just the reality. Most people call me once they already have a behavioral problem, not trying to head things off. Most people are not proactive when it comes to dogs and dog training. They are reactive. And that's why we have issues. And so that's kind of the point of this segment is I want you to head off these issues and not have to have this problem by knowing just a handful of things, a handful of questions you have to ask yourself of, is this breed the right breed for me? Okay, like first and foremost, I mean, I feel like this should be obvious, but unfortunately, especially with COVID happened, that, you know, all that crap that happened and people went out and got dogs and we discovered, you know, myself and other professionals, other veterinarians, we really discovered a lot of people, number one, a lot of people got dogs that should just not have dogs. Sorry, but that's the truth. And number two, a lot of people went and got dog breeds that they absolutely have no business owning. Okay? Like, I'm just going to say it because I've seen a few of these. The German Shepherds, man. Like, I don't understand why people buy German Shepherds when they physically can't walk. Like, seriously, physically can't walk. So you can't exercise the dog. They don't have a yard. They don't have space for the dog to run. They have zero intent on giving this dog any kind of job or anything to do. And then they wonder why the dog is growling at people or having issues or... I mean, guys, I'm just blunt honesty time here. Like, I have to say this. German Shepherds are not the breed for most people. Bulldogs are not the breed for most people. Hell, Labrador Retrievers are not the breed for most people. Golden Retrievers, holy hell, are definitely not the breed for most people. I think they're a phenomenal family dog, and I think they're my number one pick for a family dog. But I don't think most people should have them. Like, isn't that kind of an oxymoron? I know, I get it. But how many people out there, guys, how many people do you know with Goldens that have anxiety issues, that eat socks, that literally cannot walk around the house or greet somebody without a toy in its mouth because it's got obsessive issues or eating issues? Or I've seen so many Goldens over the years that have problems, and it's because people are not fulfilling them. Like, Goldens are meant to do something, guys. They're retrievers, and they want to retrieve, not just a ball in your backyard every day. You know, some of them that you can get away with that, but I see a lot of frustrated Goldens. I see a lot of frustrated Labs because they are quote unquote good family dogs. And that's very true. Very true. Wonderful dogs with children. Amazing. But man, do they need exercise and stimulation, and man, do people not give it to them. So when we start talking about this breed specific stuff here, let's roll through the questions. The first question that's very important is, how active are you? And this is not a judgment thing, guys. I could not care less. It's your life. It's your lifestyle. And I am not one to judge. Whatever you want to do, however active you do or don't want to be, is completely up to you. But then don't go out and get a high energy breed. You know, don't go out and get a doodle. If you know damn well, you're never going to walk the thing. It just boggles my mind how many people knowingly put their own dogs in a crappy situation. Like, I don't, I don't get the point of getting an active dog if you're not active. I mean this in the nicest way. Don't. Like, don't. There's so many other dog breeds out there. I'm not talking little dog breeds, right? Like, go get a Mastiff. They don't need a ton of exercise, and they're amazing big dogs, okay? They're lazy. St. Bernards, those of you living up north, you know, I wouldn't want a St. Bernard in Florida if I could help it. They can do okay if you acclimate them, but, you know, yeah. Newfoundland, same thing. What a gentle giant. What an amazing dog that doesn't need tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of... You don't have to go for a 3-mile walk every single day. As a matter of fact, you'll probably kill the dog's joints doing that its entire life. You know, like little things like that. It's not that Newfies don't need exercise. It's that they don't need a German Shepherd style exercise, you know? And so that's the first question you have to ask yourself and your family. Realistically, how active are you? Are you willing to take this dog for an hour plus walk every single day? Yeah. It's like, oh, David, I hadn't really thought about that. That's the very, I mean, to me, that question right there, if you can answer that question honestly, you will avoid so much headache, heartache, and everything when you go looking for a dog that's perfect for your family. How active are you? This isn't rocket science, guys. How much time are you willing to set aside? This is the second question. How much time are you willing to set aside for actual training? I'm not talking the walk. This is aside from the walk. What about training? If you're going out and getting a 90-pound dog, you have the responsibility to make sure it's trained. And I say this to all my quote-unquote aggressive breed dog owners out there. German Shepherd owners, Pit Bull owners, Doberman owners, Akita. I mean, we can keep going. You all have an unfortunate extra responsibility to train your dog better than the person to the left and to the right of you. I mean this, like this is now professional wagging the finger. If you have any of these quote unquote aggressive breeds, you have more of a societal responsibility to train that dog better than anybody else's, because there is a genuine fear of them, guys, and it's your job to change people's perception of that, as well as, I hate to say it, there are some healthy fears out there. Some people have been bit by these breeds, and so it helps when your dog doesn't stare them down. Oh, he's just happy to see you. Well, that's nice, but the person who's scared of the dog doesn't know that. Maybe you should teach your dog to not do that, right? I mean this in a nice, loving way. As a dog owner, you've got to be responsible about these things. And it's unfortunate that you have to take the extra step. It's not unfortunate because you should train your dog that well anyway, in my opinion. That's just me. But you get what I'm saying. That's the second question you have to ask yourself. How much time are you really willing to commit to the training? Because some dogs do need more training than others. Some dogs are more stubborn to train than others. Okay? Like, oh man, Doodles. Like, everybody wants the Doodles, guys. Doodles are some of the most headstrong dogs I've worked with. And I can't even tell you how many other professionals over the years I've talked to that 100% agree with me. Everybody thinks the Doodles are so cute and so this and so that. Do not get a dog based on how cute they are. Do not get a dog based on what you've heard from your friends. Do not get a dog based on, well, their genetics were great from that thing, so this one will be great over here. It's not how it works, guys. You're living in dreamland. Doodles, and again, I don't care if this is an unpopular opinion, to me are some of the worst bred dogs out there. It's because of the popularity of them. There's a lot of inbreeding, and it encourages poor breeding, poor genetics, poor training, poor dog ownership, poor education on what you're actually getting. Because everybody goes, oh, but David, Doodles are so cute. I go, do you understand you're mixing a poodle and a lab or golden most of the time? Most of the time. You understand how smart poodles are? Do you understand how active they are? Do you understand what a poodle was originally bred for? And the answer usually is, well, no. So you're going to go out and get this dog because it's cute, but you don't know anything about what its needs are because you don't even understand what that dog is at its core. This is why over the years, I would say I could arguably say in the past 10 years, the phone call I have gotten for serious behavioral issues more than any other dog is the Doodle. Hands down, guys, not even a question, not even arguable. Know the dog you're getting. Know if it's going to be good. And so there's the other side of it. And it's, David, I want to rescue a dog. Oof. Now I get it. This adds another, let's throw another wrench in a variable in it. Because look, I'll be honest, this guy behind me here, He was labeled a lab hound mix. He has zero lab and zero hound after a genetics test. And yeah, you know, while he's an amazing dog and I think he could probably do well in a lot of settings, a first time dog owner might have had a little bit of a tough time with him. He's got some tough breeds mixed in there. Riker, I'm talking about. Sorry for those of you not watching on YouTube. You know, Riker is one of those dogs where he had a lot of high energy breeds. He had some farm dog style breeds, if you will. And to somebody who has never owned a dog, that could be a little tough. So I understand the trepidation going into a rescue and going, gee, I don't know what this is and I don't know what I'm getting. Totally get it, guys. And this is why I'm not anti-breeder by any means, because some people, sometimes you need to know what you're getting because you have a specific need and you want to fulfill your dog's specific needs. I love it. Just find a responsible breeder. That's all I ask. All right. So the right breed for you can be tough, but I can guarantee you with those two questions right there, how active am I? And am I active? Am I going to be active getting this dog? And the second one is how much time realistically am I going to put into the training? Those two questions would avoid so many problems if people just answered them honestly and really did their research on what a dog breed is. And there's the second thing, guys. Do your research. Do your due diligence. Know what you're getting, whether it's from a perspective of breed and behavior or genetics and responsible breeding. Because the only way to stop irresponsible breeding is for people to stop supporting irresponsible breeding. So I really highly encourage you to do your research. Know what you're getting. All right, guys. So I hope a little bit of that helps out. It's pretty, like, guys, that's the thing. When it comes to the right breed for you, honestly, don't overcomplicate it. It's pretty simplistic. With those two questions right there, you really can narrow down your breeds and understand what you're looking for and what your needs are, okay? I say this with love because I want you guys to be happy and fulfilled with the friend and the four-legged buddy you're getting. Almost more importantly, I have to say it, it's my job. I need your dog to be fulfilled. I need your dog to be happy. And the only way to do that is to match the right lifestyle. Match the right lifestyle to whatever breed you end up with. So good luck out there. Select breeds responsibly. And remember, it's not always the cutest dog, but the dog that fits your needs and you filling their needs as well. Next on Speak a Dogcast, it's the history of animal mascots 101. Today, we'll be talking about Oregon State University. Now, Oregon State was founded in 1868, and their mascot has changed a few times over the years before they settled on becoming the Beavers. Now, the earliest mascot was Jimmy the Coyote. He was actually a live coyote that represented the football team in 1892 and 1893. Now, from 1906 to 1910, a bulldog owned by then-athletic director James Arbonnot, he was seen pictured with some of the athletic teams often, and the dog was an unofficial mascot, never having been considered an official representation of the school. Now, there is a record that the school was referred to as the Beavers as early as 1910, but that's disputed among some historians, as they believe the date was a little later, around 1916. There was a period of time when the school's mascot was actually a real person, not an animal. Yes, John Richard Newton Bell was a Presbyterian minister and longtime member of the university's Board of Regents and arguably the football team's biggest supporter. Now, he became famous for his ritual of marching down to the Marys River after a victory against Oregon University to throw his hat into the river as a token of celebration. Clearly, celebrations were a little more mundane back then. Kind of nice. By the 1920s, the event had become an established ritual among the community. And to honor Bell, they named the football field after him, Bell Field, which stayed that way until 1951, when Bell Field was replaced by Parker Stadium. I don't understand why they couldn't have made it Parker Stadium at Belfield. A lot of schools do that. I think it's kind of a shame that they did away with the tradition, being that he played such a large part early on in the football team's, you know, history. So I think they should bring that back and do something with that. Or maybe even just bring the tradition back of the, you know, the hat in the river. I mean, come on, that's kind of cool. Anyway, in the 1920s, there was a push for Bevo the Beaver. Yes, but that was unsuccessful. Maybe because of the popularity of Bell at the time. Now, On the cover of the 1935 December issue of the Oregon State Alumni Magazine, there was a picture of Bill, a live beaver, under the care of the school's wildlife club. Now, under the photo, it actually clearly identifies Billy, or Bill, as the school's new mascot. Now, the beaver mascot had sort of a fun or kind demeanor, and the way he looked and was drawn. That was until 1999. Yes. Now, the school introduced a revision of the mascot, the first ever revision made, and he became known as Angry Beaver or Angry Benny Beaver. The answer to today's trivia question: in the movie Finding Nemo, what type of fish is Dory? She's a blue tang. Yes, everybody's always so familiar with Nemo, they know he's the clownfish, but not everybody knows about Dory being a blue tang. Next on Speak a Dogcast, it's the listener Q&A. The first question today comes from Charisse from Miami, Florida. Charisse says, I cannot get my dog to stop pulling. I just bought a martingale collar, but she seems to keep pulling, just kind of choking herself a little like she did with the nylon collar that I had before. How can I stop the pulling? Charisse, thank you for the question. This is good timing with the question. We did a segment on correct corrections today, and that's just it, Charisse. You have to make a correction. You know, if we want a behavior to decrease and to stop, we have to provide some form of correction or punishment to get that behavior to decrease. And you've got the correct collar now, but you have to utilize it. Now, in the segment, you know, today that we talked about, we talk about the pop corrections. And that's the point. I need you to make a pop correction, not a pull, not a yank, not letting her pull. It needs to be a pop correction. Now, one other thing is you want to kind of get ahead of this. I say have parent mentality. It's not, oh, why'd you do that? It's don't even think about it. Okay. And that's kind of the mentality you got to have. So this is going to start when you walk out your front door, because I could almost guarantee your dog's probably pulling the second you walk out the door. And if that's the case, you need to be ahead of it. When you go to open that door, make a little correction before she even has an opportunity to pull. Because if you correct these things before they do the bad behavior, they never do the bad behavior, right? Now, it's not guaranteeing the first correction is going to work instantly. It may take a few corrections, but it needs to be pop. It needs to be a quick correction in and out. Very important, okay? But then you're going to work your way down the driveway, because, you know, you may get down away from the house and she's doing really well, and then all of a sudden she pulls again. And you can't necessarily be ahead of that because it's sudden, right? Make a correction. We have to have proper corrections going on here in order to get her to stop pulling, okay? So try making some proper corrections. Listen to that segment today, and hopefully that helps out. Next question. This comes from Kenny from Atlanta, Georgia. Kenny says, my dog takes treats a little rough. Now, he's a yellow lab, and boy, is he food motivated. I just want him to be more gentle. How can I get him to be more gentle? Great question, Kenny. Yeah, you know, labs will just snap that thing right out of your hand, won't they? They're like a little alligator. What you have to do is, my little trick is, you're going to take the treat, and I usually take it and pinch it between my middle three fingers. I make like a little crevice using my ring finger, my pointer finger to grab onto the treat, and then I rest the treat in my middle finger, just like that, a little crevice. Now, look, you have a yellow lab though, so I'd probably just take the treat and make a fist. Make a fist, but still pinch it. I like to still pinch it in my fingers. Make a fist, close the fist, and you're going to ask your dog for a sit. And when you go to give him a treat, first of all, if he pops up out of the sit, you need to redirect him back into the sit. You cannot give him a treat unless he is sitting and calm. Like, that's part of the key here. It's going to take a little patience, a little work, okay? But you're going to clamp that thing, clamp that treat into your hip fist. I can talk, I promise, okay? And then you're going to go to give it to him. If he leaps up and tries to pull it out of your hand, you're going to say no, and just pull your hand backwards a little bit. Just no. Okay. Don't need to yell at him. Don't need to make it a big deal. Just no. No. Okay. Go to give it to him again. If he starts to, no, back away. Okay. A few of those, he might start to get a little more patient and not be as chompy. That's when I might try to open my fist up to present the treat. Guess what? He's probably going to try to chomp it right out of your hand. Close the fist back up. No, back away. Okay. The whole concept is, we're trying to get them to understand, the crazier you are, you don't get the treat. The more you relax and calm down, the treat moves towards you. Okay. Little baby steps. Then eventually what we want to do is get it to the point that I can open my hand up and give him the treat. But what I want you to try to work on is, like, I go back to the clamping. We're going to clamp that treat between our fingers to the point that it's going to encourage your dog to lick the treat out. When you hide the treat in your fingers like that, your dog has to. Because the problem is most people give a treat by, what do? We like pinch, you know, when you're pinching your finger, your thumb and your pointer. Most people hold the treat in their hands like this. And the dog doesn't have an option. They have a pointy nose. They have to kind of bite the treat to get it out, unless they've been taught to lick, you know, lick the treat out properly. But that's a dog's natural inclination, is to go to nip it out of there, because that's the easiest way for them to do it, when you present a treat pinched in your thumb and your pointer. But if you can hide the treat in between your fingers, so the only way for your dog to get it out is to lick, then you can control it, release the treat as he licks it, and he starts understanding, oh, I lick the treat to get it, okay? And then we can evolve this into presenting. I always try to teach people to, especially like if like you have little kids, want to present the treat in a flat palm so the dog licks it out of your hand, as opposed to the pinch that we all do to give it to him and the dog hump. And that's the thing, is most of the time we inadvertently actually teach the dogs, we inadvertently teach them to chomp, not even realizing it. So I know there's a lot. It's like, it's going to be a process. I can guarantee Kenny, this isn't going to be an overnight thing. It's going to take a little time. Then again, you have a yellow lab. Might be really smart. Some of them figure this out real fast. But the key is sit. He needs to be calm. Okay. And you want to pinch the treat, clamp the treat, make a fist, whatever you got to do to not let him get it. And the only way he's allowed to have the treat is if he's calm and if he's licking the treat out, as opposed to the hump. If he stands up and gets crazy, you immediately take the treat away. Calms down, present the treat again. Okay, a little back and forth to get there. Might take you a couple days, but good luck with that. Let me know if you have any more questions. That'll wrap up the podcast today. Thank you so much for listening in. If you haven't clicked that subscribe or that follow button, do so right now. New episodes come out every Wednesday and you're going to want to check them out. You can follow me on Instagram at SpeakADogCast, find my YouTube channel at SpeakADogCast, and if you want to support the show even further, become a patron of the show today, patreon.com/SpeakADogCast. If you love the show, if you love what you're hearing, do me a favor, scroll on down, give me that 5-star rating, or leave me a review. I would really appreciate it, guys. I want to thank my patrons, my pup supporter Regula Wright, and my dog friend, Maureen Crossin. Have a wonderful week, and don't forget to get out there and walk your dog.